Hi, guys. I have to tell you, when Kevin says that it doesn't matter about the content, it's just about your note-taking, I don't know whether or not to get offended. But that's a side note. Whatever. We'll talk later. So like he said, my name is Haley Conrad, and I'm a part of the Next Gen team, which basically means that if you ever see a bunch of kids running back in the gym or hear a bunch of balloons popping or like general, I want to say screaming, but like happy screaming, like, ah, ha, ha, we're having so much fun. It's back in the gym and we're just being hooligans. So that's where I normally am. And so it's really cool to be up here with you guys today. So today, like Kevin said, we were finishing up our series called Epic. And we were talking about the different elements that are in stories that we want to implement in our own lives, or the things that we can learn from significant stories and where we can work them in the way that we live, in the way that we work, and in the way that we continue to do our lives. So with all of that being said, we are going to look in the book of Job today. It is going to be a blast. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of the book of Job, but he has, it's like the kid's book, is it Harry and the Really Terrible, Horrible, Bad Day or something like that? This is Job's day. He has a really, really bad day. So we're gonna look at the very end of that story and then we're gonna come back and look at the beginning. So here we're gonna start at the end. In Job 42, 1 through 2, hey, look, and it's in page 451 in your Bibles. Look at that. And if you do not have a Bible, I am here to tell you that that one is for you, the one right in your pew. Pew, pew. All right, so, sorry. We're gonna read through Job now. So it says, then Job replied to the Lord, I know that you can do anything and no one can stop you. You asked, who is this that questions my wisdom with such ignorance? It is I, and I was talking about things I knew nothing about, things far too wonderful for me. You said, listen and I will speak. I have some questions for you and you must answer them. I had only heard about you before, but now I have seen you with my own eyes. And that's kind of the passage that we're gonna be in for most of the day. I had only heard about you, but now I have seen you with my own eyes. And so it is this idea that Job has been taken back, he's been brought back because God has talked back to him, basically. So we're going to look through the whole narrative of Job and see what this means in context. So in the very beginning, in the very first chapter of the book of Job, we learn about Job from the book of Job. And he is this guy who has everything he has ever wanted. He has cattle, he has lamb, which I don't know why that's different than cattle, but they specify that. And he has tons of kids and he has so much land and property and he is notorious. He has lots of fame in the community. So he has all of these amazing things. And then one by one, messengers come up and tell him that he has lost everything that he has owned. So the first one comes up and say, hey, your cattle has been taken away by a foreign army. And then the second one comes and say, hey, your land or your sheeps have been stolen by a fire from heaven, something weird like that. And then the third one, your family has been sitting around, they were eating, they were dining together, and a giant wind took them. And so it is in this moment where Job is stuck and he does not know what the next step is because everything he has ever loved and everything that he has ever owned has been taken away from him. It has been stripped from who he was, and he's left in the spot where, I don't know if you guys have ever been in this spot where it's like, I don't know where the next step is. I don't know where to turn to because everything that I held my identity in is gone. Everything I ever loved is gone. And so he, in this moment, well, he has one thing left. And before I tell this, I have to tell you that I had a really stone cold professor for a really long time. It reminds me of the teacher from Ferris Bueller's Day Off when he goes, Bueller. So I had one like that for a while. But Job was left with his wife, who was kind of like telling him all the things that he did wrong and all this. And my professor goes, he goes, that probably didn't help. And then he just keeps going. And I was like, oh, thank you, doctor. So anyway, that's one of my favorite stories. And anyway, Job in this moment starts to curse the day he was born. He starts telling God that it would have been better for him to have died than for him to have suffered the loss that he has right now. And he basically questions God in this moment, which I understand. If I lost everything I ever loved, there's no part of me that would have been able to feel like God was on my side in that moment. I don't know if you guys have ever felt something like that where it's like, God obviously is against me in this moment. There is no part of him that wants me to succeed. And so Job is in this place. And so he starts cursing God and starts telling him that these are all the things that you've done wrong. And then God responds, which is probably not a good sign when you've just been screaming at him. So we're gonna look through Job 38, 1 through 5. And it says, then the Lord answered Job from the whirlwind. Who is this that questions my wisdom with such ignorant words? How kind. Then he says, brace yourself like a man because I have some questions for you and you must answer them. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you know so much. Who determined its dimensions and stretched out the surveying line? So God in this moment is looking at Job and saying, were you there when I created all of the things that you have? Were you there when I put creation into motion? Were you there when all of these things began? And it's just like, I don't know, I see a cartoon character, Job, just like, nope, no, I wasn't. And so it is in this moment where Job is being brought back into perspective. He's being shown again the ways that God has been present before him and he will be present way after him as well. And so Job in this moment is reminded of who God is and the importance of what God does in the world. And so it is in this moment where Job is taken back and he can see, I was not there when God laid the earth's foundations. Like I am in this narrative, I am not the main character. And so it is, his perspective has completely changed and he's able to go back and see, I have only ever heard of you before, but through this, now I can see you. Through losing everything I ever loved and through going through this process, now I see you more deeply, which is crazy to me. The idea of losing everything you've ever loved and then going out into this conflict and just this struggle and then feeling like you see God more clearly than you ever have before. And so, when I talk about conflict and when I talk about the way that Job lived, I want the end of Job. I want the, now I see you, God. Now we're in this relationship that I've never had before. This is new. I don't want the beginning of Job where everything is not very much fun. It's the terrible, horrible, very bad day. And where he is told that he has lost everything that he has ever loved. I want the end of Job, where he is in this great relationship with God and everything's not great, but he's learning how to lean on God in the midst of terrible and in conflict times. But we really don't want the beginning of Job, but we know that we need to get to the end. But we don't want to take the path. We don't want to go through the conflict in order to get there. And so we avoid conflict in the craziest of ways. This always brings me back to, like I said, I work a lot with the middle schoolers and sometimes I'll split them up based on boy and girls. And so I'll be like, all right, boys over here and girls over here. And like two kids have to move because they've already separated themselves. And so I don't know about you, but I avoid conflict like the opposite gender. So, or the middle schoolers avoid the opposite gender. It's whatever. So like I said, today we are talking about conflict and that is the title of our series, not series, of my sermon today. So today, if you're taking notes, conflict is our title. And so just like we avoid conflict, like we avoid cooties in elementary school and how middle schoolers avoid conflict, like they avoid the opposite gender. I know that I do. Tell me, like look to your neighbor or just shout it out loud. Which one do you think is easier, bottling everything up or actually dealing with our problems? Bottling it all up. That's what I do. I am the worst at that. I just take all of the things that have kind of just been going on in life and I just like shove it in like this, I think of it like a little bottle. I'm like, and then I just put it all away. What about when someone walks by you, hey, how are you doing? And you're like, oh my goodness, it's been a rough day, but you're really just like, I am so good, how are you? Does anybody else do that? Because you don't want to be the person that's like, let me tell you all the things that have happened. Let me tell you. And you're like, oh, I thought this was a passerby conversation. Or when someone tells you that you have to deal with some of the issues that are going on in your life and you're like, oh, no, I really don't want that. Like, that sounds like the opposite of the thing that I want right now. Does anybody else have that where it's like, it would be so much easier to just continue to stuff all of our problems down and to never actually deal with them? One of my favorite authors writes this book and he writes it about his life journey and all of the different stories that he's kind of lived through. And some movie editors came up to him and they tell him, hey, we wanna make your life story into a movie. And he realizes through the editing process that his life wasn't that interesting, is what he says. He says, I don't know if I lived a life well enough to make a movie about it. And then I think back on my own life and I'm like, if they made that into a movie, that would be terrible. It would be me watching a whole lot of other movies, is what it would be. So, oh, That'd be really interesting now that I think about it. So, but anyway, he realized that his life was not worth telling at all. And he comes up with this quote and he tells us that sometimes our stories are stolen by the easy life. And so there's an idea that we are so entranced by the idea of living a life that is not difficult that we avoid conflict at every cost and our stories suffer because of it. We aren't able to live the life that we could because we are so stuck in the conflict and we're so stuck trying to avoid all of the things that are going on that we're not able to go past it. And so our stories are not nearly as significant or as powerful because of it. We are stuck in this place where we don't want to avoid the things that we know that we have to go through. And so we just stay and we're stuck in a rut and we don't move forward at all. I don't know if you guys have ever been there, but I surely have. So we are so drawn into the idea of making our life easy that we miss the chance to make our story significant. It's funny when we look at movies and we try and see, like, I always think back to the movie Frozen. I don't know if any of you have seen Frozen. Hands up, maybe. No, there's like six people. Fine. So I've seen the movie Frozen 170,000 times. And there is an ice princess because it's a Disney movie and everyone's a princess. And so there's this ice princess who can't control her powers because she has spent so long trying to hide them and try to keep them away from other people that after a little bit, it just kind of like explodes and there's an ice disaster. She actually ends up making a palace, but it's fine. And she ends up making all these great things. But it's crazy when we watch the movie and we see her trying to hide all of her powers. And it's like, that's not gonna work. There's gotta be a conflict arc in this somewhere. And that's what it is. Her not dealing with her issues, that's gonna cause some problems. But it's funny when we do it with ourselves, where it's like, oh, I can hide all of the issues that I have and it won't be a big deal at all. Or, you know, I can take all of the bad, all the things that are kind of bringing me down and I can just shove them back here and they won't come back out. Whereas when we watch like Frozen, we're like, oh, that's not gonna work. But it's really hard when we're like trying to make it like actually apply to our own life. I wanna tell you the story of a guy named Viktor Frankl. And there should be a picture up here. That's the guy. And he was a Jewish man in the times of the Holocaust. And so he was put into a concentration camp with lots of other prisoners. And one of his main goals while he was there was that he took the time to whisper hope and to let people know that life was gonna be okay and that there was hope at the end of this journey. And so he would whisper hope into the other prisoners' ears. He would tell them that even though there was so much pain in this moment, there had to be hope and there had to be joy on the other end. And so he would take the time to do this no matter what was going on in the circumstances that were around him. I just think that's crazy that in the midst of that, that he decided that that was what he was going to do. And so on this journey, as we talk about conflict and how much fun that can be, I wanna be someone that can whisper hope into that moment because sometimes it just feels like you're stuck in a rut and who knows what that next step looks like? Who knows what it looks like to go beyond the conflict that it feels like is absorbing our own life? And so I hope that as we go on, we can look towards the idea of what it looks like to be Viktor Frankl in this moment and to embrace the conflict and to see that there is meaning behind it. And so my hope today is that we are able to look past ourselves even when it feels like we are stuck in the middle of so much conflict. And we are gonna look through some scripture verses that talk about this issue. But first, I wanna introduce something that is a little bit overlooked when we look towards scripture, and it is this idea of being brought from the water. We're gonna have the water over here. And then we're gonna look at the wilderness. And so there's an idea that there are so many times when people are taken out of literal water, circumstances that are easy, where it feels like they can obviously see God working, to places where the wilderness is, where it feels like you can't find God no matter where you are looking. And so is the idea of being taken from the water to the wilderness, of seeing God so clearly that you don't know where he could be in the next step. And it's almost like immediately taken from the water into the wilderness. And so the first one we're gonna look at is in Exodus. So Exodus is the story of the Israelites, and they are taken through the Red Sea, and they are, God splits the water in two, and which is kind of crazy when I think about it. I like to put myself in the shoes of the people who are like in the biblical passages, and then it always reminds me of my favorite joke that I'm going to tell you right now, is that if you walk a mile in someone else's shoes, you're a mile away and you have their shoes. Sorry, my favorite joke. But So there is a point where they are standing out looking at the Red Sea and God splits the waters. And it is in that moment where they can see God working more clearly than they ever have before. So they are taken from this moment and then they are immediately led into the desert. We're going to read that passage. It says, then Moses led the people of Israel away from the Red Sea and they moved out into the desert of Shur. They traveled in this desert for 3 days without finding any water. So they were in this place where they saw God work miracles, do amazing things, and then they are brought immediately into the wilderness. They are taken from a place where they saw God more clearly than they ever have, and then taken to a place where they couldn't find him even if they looked hard enough. They could barely see the common necessities that they need, let alone find where God was in the midst of all this struggle. Can you imagine being out and looking out at the desert, knowing that the water is behind you, the amazing things that God has done, but seeing only the desert and knowing that the promised land is past that, knowing that in this gap that you have to go through the wilderness in order to get into the promised land that God has told you is there. In order to get from where you know that God is working the clearest, you have to go through this wilderness or this patch of just conflict and of struggle and of pain in order to get there. Or there's another passage that we're going to look through. It is in Mark, and it is when Jesus gets baptized. And it is in this moment where Jesus was baptized, the literal heavens opened up, which is crazy. And then a spirit like a dove descended on him. And his identity is confirmed in that moment. So in the water, we can see that our identity is confirmed. And in the wilderness, in the conflict, is when our identity is tested. And so Jesus in this moment is told that he is the Son of God. Everyone else is shown that he is the Son of God. And then he is immediately taken into the wilderness. It says, the Spirit then compelled Jesus to go into the wilderness right after he was baptized. He goes from the water straight into the wilderness, immediately after each other. From the water straight into the wilderness. I always think this is insane looking at this narrative and seeing the ways that he is brought directly from a place where he has seen his father work amazing ways to a place where he is tempted for 40 days and he doesn't know what the next step could be. So this is always crazy, and this is not just in these two narratives. There's also the narrative of Elijah, and in this moment Elijah has just built an altar and he's just shown how amazing God could be. He poured water on the altar and the altar still caught on fire. And then he goes straight into the wilderness where he doesn't know where God is working. So he goes straight from the water into the wilderness. And then there's the story of Hagar, who goes from Abraham's house and then straight into the wilderness. And then there's the story of Adam and Eve, who are born in the Garden of Eden and then they are sent back out into the wilderness not knowing where God is. And so I don't know where your wilderness patch is. I don't know where your conflict is. And I don't know where you are struggling to see where God is working. But I do know that I know that I have mine. And I know that I have a lot of places where I know that I have to take that next step, where I have to notice where the conflict is and I have to keep going, where I have to recognize that the promised land is just past where I don't want to go through. Because I know that the conflict is back here. And sometimes it's really easy for me to stay stuck in what I wanna do and the ways that I don't want to go through the things that I know that I have to. I don't wanna process through the emotions and through the guilt and through the different difficulties that I know I have to go through. So I don't know if you guys kind of have that, but I know that I do. I know that I kind of have my own water to wilderness story. I kind of have my own way that God took me from the place where I feel like I was most safe and where I feel like I was working the best and I was placed into a place where there was a lot of wilderness. And so I'm gonna go through that a little bit. I was at a spiritual retreat for about 2 days probably. And I had spent so much time focusing on the ways that God was working and how he was giving us different disciplines in order to find him more clearly. And then I got a call. And I had just heard that I had lost one of my friends. And it was in this moment that I was immediately taken from knowing where God was working to feeling like God had left me. And so it was in this moment where I didn't know where my next steps came from. I didn't know where to go. But I knew that I didn't want to go through the wilderness. And I thought that maybe staying in the conflict and staying where I didn't have to process through so much was going to be so much easier. I didn't realize that going through the conflict and then recognizing the promised land at the other end. So there was this part of me that wanted to not grieve anymore. There was a part of me that didn't want to go through all the things that really hurt. And so I just tried to stay far, far away from the wilderness, thinking that it would be easier than walking through it. I tried to recognize where my wilderness was and then run the other way, even though I knew that the promised land was on the other side. I knew that there was a journey that I had to take. I had to go through the wilderness, but I knew that going through that was going to be exhausting and it was going to be so much effort. And so I decided to stay far, far away, even though I knew the joy that was on the other end. And we can see this. We can see how much easier it is to sometimes stay back and to remove ourselves from what we know we are supposed to go towards. We know that there is a place that is better for us to go to, but yet we stay curled up knowing that the wilderness sometimes looks way too scary for us to make that jump. It looks way too scary for us to make that pathway into it. Because sometimes when we're just like the Israelites, we're standing out, looking out at the desert, thinking, there is no way. Like, they went 3 days without water, and I have gone 20 minutes and I'm about to die. So I can't even imagine. So there are parts when looking out at the wilderness, I think that there could be no possible way. Even though I know that there is a place that God has promised me on the other end, I don't know where that next step is. And then I am able to look back and see the resurrection that God has promised us. There is a resurrection at the end, no matter what is going on. And it reminds me back to this quote by Don Miller that talks about, it says, our stories are stolen by the easy life. Our stories are stolen by the easy life. And there are so many ways that I try to stick back with my own conflict, knowing that I need to take those next steps. And so I know that my story is stolen by the easy life because it looks so much better than the wilderness that is coming up before me. It looks so much better than the pain and the struggle that is coming up. Even though I know that there is joy at the other end, I am stuck in my rut knowing that I don't know what the next step is. And so, I don't know if you guys ever have this, but this happened with Job as well. There's a point where he knows what his next steps are. He knows where he's supposed to go. He saw God as the one who was present even in the darkest of times. Even when he lost everyone he was supposed to, even when he could not find where God was working and he screamed out at God and God changed his perspective, he was able to say that he had only heard of God before, but now he sees God more clearly. This is, it always strikes me back as when I'm going through some of my hardest times, I always look to Sunday. I always look to Sunday because I know that Sunday is coming and I know that we can all be here together. We can all be in a congregation. We can worship together. I don't know if you guys ever look forward to Sunday because you're just like, that is the day. That is, we can all get together. We can see our friends. I know that I have small group on Sunday. I know that I can go to lunch with people on Sunday. And then the next day is Monday. And you know what's on Monday? Is work. And so it is the idea that you're going straight from Sunday mentality to Monday. From Sunday to Monday, you're going straight from the water, from the places that you know where God is working, into Monday, which is the wilderness. And so you're going from a place where you know that there is comfort and that there is so much fun, and you are going to a place where sometimes you don't know what to do and sometimes it feels a little bit hopeless. I know that's a little bit of an exaggerated example, but there's also this, my junior year of high school, I went on a trip to Spain, which I know is ridiculous because normally when you go on a school field trip, you go to the zoo. But I don't know how this happened. But I ended up getting to go to Spain, and then we took a boat down to Morocco. I said Morocco last service, and they were like, Morocco's not in Spain. I was like, I know. But so we took a boat down to Morocco, and we got to see different camels, and the place was... It was crazy how much sand there was because I'm used to sand only being at the beach. And there was so much sand and I got to see some of the camels, and the amount of water that they took in was insane. Someone came up to me after first service and told me it's like 55 gallons of water in 3 minutes, which is just another thing that is amazing to me. So that is just so much water, and it's so fast. But anyway, they are taking in so much water so fast, and it makes me wonder, what if we did that when we knew that paths of wilderness were coming? When we knew that there were stretches where we didn't know where God was going to be working, what if we filled ourselves up in moments where we knew that wilderness was coming up, but we didn't know what it would look like? What if we filled ourselves up so that in the wilderness, we were able to look back and see where God was working? What if in the times when we didn't feel God, we could know that God was present? What would that look like for us if we kind of absorbed all of that so that in those stretches where we know that we don't feel like God is there, we can know that he is there? And so only through those times can we come out praising God when we go through the wilderness and we recognize that he has always been present, that he has always been there. And so I have to tell you that although our identity is confirmed in the water, it is tested in the wilderness, and it is tested and it is so difficult. But our identity is confirmed in the water. It is confirmed. We are told that we are God's special people, but we are tested in the wilderness. And sometimes it's so, so hard because it's really hard for us to be stuck in this wilderness point and to not be able to look and see that the promised land is just past the wilderness point. We can turn and we can see that sometimes life is so hard, but there's promised land at the end of it. There is so much going on in this moment, but we are redemption people. We are resurrection people. We are always pointing out to something greater than what we are currently living in. Our story is a part of a grander story. Our story is not the end. And so here's the deal is that every story has death in it. Every single story has conflict, has wilderness. But our story points back to a resurrection that is greater than our own. Every single story is able to give us the chance to look beyond ourselves. And so there's a point where it's like, we are not the end of our own story because we are looking towards a God who is resurrected. He has resurrected himself and he's resurrecting us. And so it is in this moment where we can turn and see that God is working no matter what wilderness we are in, no matter what is happening. So there is death in every story, but we have to look past that and see that the resurrection is just past the wilderness. That just in this point, we can look and see that there's so much joy that is found in being resurrected with Christ. So, all right. Let me pray for you guys. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for giving us this chance to come together, to talk about you, and to hear about how you're working. Please help us to recognize where you are working, even in the wilderness points, even in the times when it feels way too hard to make that next step. Please help us to see you, even in the times when we don't feel you. Help us to recognize where you were working. Help us to recognize where we had only heard of you before, but through going through things that hurt and through that are very difficult, that we can see you more clearly than we ever have before. Help us that when we're in the midst of the wilderness to recognize your voice calling out to us, saying that there is resurrection at the end. Help us to know that every story has redemption and that you are the one who is redeeming and who's restoring it all. And all of these things we pray, amen.